You're listening to the Deal Farm Podcast with Ken Corsini, educating, inspiring, and connecting you to real estate deals. And now, your host, Ken Corsini.
Hey, this is Ken Corsini with The Deal Farm. On today's Best Deal Ever episode, I've got Jonathan Makovsky. Jonathan, how you doing?
Pretty good, Ken. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks so much for being on the show. So Jonathan is a full-time real estate investor who lives in New York. He actually operates and focuses most of his attention in Connecticut, and he's been full-time for about 18 months. And Jonathan, I would love to hear the story about how you got started and left your day job and became a full-time real estate investor.
Sure. So my background, I'm a CPA by trade, worked for one of the big accounting firms, and then a large asset management firm in their accounting, and it was never really my focus. Everyone said, oh, go be a CPA. It's good. You'll get the background if you ever want to do anything. It took me a long time to realize the value because at first I thought it was a big waste of time. Now it's been proven fantastic. From there, I did a couple of entrepreneurial roles and was really looking to start my own business. I didn't know what I was looking at around a lot of different industries. And actually, it was my mom that kept pushing me into real estate. And she's like, look, you got to try it. You should do it. It's, been great. You know, anyone that's in it has been great. So, I stumbled upon, different websites and, speaking, just networking with everyone. And it ultimately was kind of what I wanted to do to get in. And I really wanted to primarily and focus on buy and holds on the large multifamilies and office buildings. Mm-hmm. I left, as you mentioned, in January of 2014, and I couldn't find anything for months. I mean, I was looking before then and was continuing to look after. And the beginning of March of last year. So at this point, I'd left my job, like you said, we had, some money in the bank. So, we felt comfortable going for it. It took me a while to get started. I met my now business partner in March, a couple months later. We were kind of both talking. We met on BiggerPockets actually. And I know you blog for them.
Yeah, that's awesome. Great community, great place to plug in and find other investors.
Yeah, it's great. And so we were kind of talking because we're both looking for buy and hold, and we were having a lot of trouble finding. So I was, kind of just going through backgrounds, and my business partner George mentioned that he, his background is in contracting. And I said, that's interesting. I've been hearing a lot about fix and flips. And, I said, I just it's not my strength to manage a rehab and to go through it. I said, but hey, if I had a partner, is that something that might interest you? And he's like, yeah, I'm kind of on the opposite side. He's like, I just don't have the time to go and find properties and look. And, he's like, the realtor that I was using has just been too busy for me. So I'm like, look, it's perfect. I have my real estate license. I was licensed at the time in New York, and there's reciprocity in Connecticut. Mm. So I got licensed in Connecticut, and we started just hitting the MLS pretty hard, doing, tons of analysis, making tons of offers. I couldn't tell you how many homes we saw, probably somewhere between 50 to 100 before we finally closed on our first deal, which was July 1st of last year. Mm-hmm. So it's been, for anyone new starting out, that's trying to get into it again, at least for me, it took us a fairly long time from January to July to find our first deal. We went into, we made tons of offers and, I think, and we, finally, jumped in and we did fairly well on that deal at the end of the day.
So just to get this straight, so you left your day job really with the intention of just finding houses to buy and hold. And was it your thinking that you would just put together some cash flows enough to live on, or what were you thinking would be like your day-to-day income initially?
So the initial thought was to buy larger multifamilies and syndicate deals. Mm-hmm. And initially to start living off the management fee, just because I didn't think I'd, you know, have enough money to live on the syndication on a year to year basis. And, you know, my feeling was, all right, if I can't remember what the math was, but it's like, all right, it's 6% gross revenue. If that's my management fee, I think I was like, all right, I need to get about, I can't even remember what the number was, of, you know, five million, enough, I don't know, whatever that number comes out to be, you know, of gross rents. And I'm like, that's where I need to be to just, you know, make this a go.
Wow. So let me ask you this. So while you're still working your CPA job, you're educating yourself on everything real estate, I'm assuming, syndication, because most guys that aren't in the business don't have any concept of how to put together a syndication and, you know, scrape together management fees. So what gave you the courage, I guess, initially to just leave your job and start putting this together?
So just to clarify, so I had left accounting, I think back in 2009 or 2010. And after that, I did a couple of entrepreneurial roles with a little more flexibility. And I mean, I've spent so much time listening to podcasts, reading books. And when I was a CPA, so sorry to answer your question, we worked on large real estate funds and public companies. So that's kind of where the CPA kicked in a little bit. Like I said, I for years I was kicking myself. Why did I do this thing? This is such a waste of time. I should have jumped into real estate from the beginning. Obviously, you know, looking back, nothing you could do about it. But the truth is actually networking with a lot of people that have been successful. Really calling people up, family, friends, anyone that I knew that was in real estate. How are they structuring their deals? And the people that are structuring it on the high level, you know, pretty much had the same model with the syndication, which is fairly similar to a private equity model.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I got so you already had a little bit of experience and felt like you could come out, maybe find some commercial type deals where you could put something like that together. Did you get close to finding anything like that?
There was one small, you know, looking back now, it was a small deal at the time. I thought it was humongous. It was a 13 unit. The seller kind of was being very difficult, wasn't giving me, you know, the information. I mean, classic. And, you know, I don't think we did not ink the contract because I didn't put any money down. So that was probably the closest. And that was actually before I left full time, thinking like, hey, I found something pretty quickly. You know, once I left in January, I'm like, oh, I'll put together a lot of these deals so fast.
Right. It's so easy. That's funny. So I guess then a couple months in, nothing's landed for you. I guess you've been making offers on buy and hold type deals and didn't land any of those. And then a couple months in, you met your business partner, I guess your future business partner, and then started in the same thing, just making offers on MLS. Were you guys doing any direct mail or anything like that, looking for fix and flips?
So yeah, I'm sorry to, yes, that's how we started. So we were spinning wheels on the MLS. I mean, we weren't even close, you know, properties that were listed for, you know, 250. I mean, we were very calculated in our offers, and we're making offers and they're coming out at around 130.
Wow.
And we weren't really going to budge on our numbers, but I guess it didn't seem like the sellers were either. So we were so far off, and we then decided to do a direct mail campaign, which worked really well. Our response rate, and I haven't calculated it recently for a while, which is you know, kind of bothersome, but our initial response rate was about 8 to 14%.
What? That's crazy. Who are you mailing to?
So we were mailing to absentee owners and pre-foreclosures.
Okay. And you had some magic postcard that you were using that you can share with everybody?
Yeah, well. So we originally, the first campaign, I don't think brought in those numbers. We tried something like photocopying with a green color ink, and that didn't work. And so I then switched to just I spent a lot of time. I probably spent about 3-4 days, just full days working on it. And we use colored envelopes. I buy them from Staples, the peel and stick ones. And I use a handwriting. I can't remember the name of it, but I got it on oh, the name is going to kill me now. I can't remember what the name of the website is. I'll get that to you and you can post it in the show.
Yeah, I would love to do that. Yeah. Was it like a free font or something like that?
Yeah, it's a font.
Okay.
DAFONT. And I experimented with that and just bought some white loose leaf paper, printed in green. I like green. I know everyone uses red. I just find red is like third grade teacher, like giving you an F on your paper.
right.
So I find green as a, you know, especially as a distressed and frustrated seller, right? To just put yourself in their shoes. You know, they open this up. They don't want to see like, you know, I want to buy your house. Like, you know, I just think it's instead of screaming at you, talking to you a little, you know, more calmly with the green color ink. And, you know, the message was pretty straightforward. And again, I'm happy if you want, I can shoot you an email of what one of ours looks like.
Yeah, I'd be really interested actually in the font too, because I do same thing. I like the handwritten look on our postcards, but the font I'm using right now I don't love. So you know, I'd love to see what you were using.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we had a lot of people call, and you know, what hurt me a lot is I spent a lot of time trying to fit it in the lines. Because Microsoft Word is—it's not as friendly to try to get it in between the loose leaf paper line. I don't think every loose leaf paper is exactly the same. So it's like, you know, I mean, again, it doesn't need to be perfect. My motto is just, you know, be good, don't be perfect, because you'll get enough business that way.
Yep.
But anyway, so yeah, I'll show you over a copy of what it looks like, and you know, I still talk about it. It's funny. I think I recalled your podcast, one that you've done, and I think you said you're mailing out about 10,000 mailers a month.
I think we're about 20 now, but yeah, somewhere in there. About 20,000 now. Yeah.
So, you know, because we always debate, it's like, you know, the leads that come in, I mean, it's great to have leads, and we've converted a lot of no's to yeses because we put it on our CRM, and, you know, I just consistently follow up with them via text, via email, however they communicated with us. I mean, for months down the road, I continue to follow up with these people. But, you know, I don't think you have, you know, the motivation on a lot of the calls that we get isn't there. So even though the response rate is high, you know, we get a lot of, hey, yeah, sure, everything's for sale, make me an offer.
Right. Yeah. And that's, it's all a numbers game though, right? I mean, for us, if we can get 50 responses, we're going to convert at least one of those into a sale for us. So it all just boils down to how much does it cost to send how many postcards, to get how many calls, to talk to how many people, to get how many deals. And you figure
exactly
out,
right.
Yeah, you figure out what your numbers are.
Exactly. Yep. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, starting out with 14% response rate, though, is pretty darn good. That makes it a lot easier. That's for sure.
Yes. Yeah. It definitely, definitely kick the nerves after, you know, getting used to speaking to the sellers.
So, granted, now you haven't been in this too long, but I love the story that you left what you'd been doing previously to pursue this full time, and that you right out of the gates, you know, said, okay, let's go ahead and start chasing some fix and flips, and that your first one, you had a lot of success on. Would you say that first deal was your best deal ever, or maybe subsequent ones since then?
Yeah, so we just flipped our second home. I think we closed on middle of May. I think it was May 18th. And I'm embarrassed to say this as a CPA, but I haven't done the full accounting on it. It looks like we've made about $80,000. That could be give or take.
Wow. So first deal made how much?
Just under 50. I think it came out to about 47.
Okay, so your first deal out of the gates, 47,000. Second deal, you're making 80,000. Man, if you keep up that rate, you'll be making a million by like deal five, right?
Yeah.
How do those numbers work? That's fantastic. So your second deal, you made 80,000. So let's talk about that deal. How did you find it, and how did it come about?
So that was a direct mailer, and you know, similar to what I was telling you before. I mean, kind of. Once we get a name and number of someone that calls, if we think there's a possibility, we'll just keep pursuing it. And so this particular seller, I had spoken to, she wasn't ready to sell. We took a look at the house, we made an offer, and it was just persistent. I just kept texting her, you know, I don't know, once, twice a week, hey, you ready to sell?
Wow.
And finally it was like, all right, we're ready. And so one of the things that, you know, I love the model of the second deal that we did compared to the first, because the first deal, In short, we went about $40,000 over our rehab budget.
Wow.
And that included actually a $10,000 cushion. Now, in fairness, that $40,000 we did other things that we didn't originally anticipate to raise the ARV. Like we had to move the front entrance to a different part of the house to put a master bathroom in. And then we opened up all the walls, and we've learned a lot. On the second deal, we had gone in with a much higher budget. And we did the opposite, actually. What we said, like, the upstairs had a pretty funky layout. It was a railroad style, and I don't know if that makes sense to people listening, but so especially in New York, you have these apartments that to get to one room, you have to get to through a different one. So the upstairs was a three bedroom, but there were only two entrances when you walk upstairs.
Okay.
So to get to that third bedroom, you had to walk through the other two. And, you know, so you have a door in the middle of one of the walls, and we were going to change the whole layout, amongst other things in the house. And we just said, you know what, you know, kind of based on where the location is, it was on a busy street. It was near a town that was not as desirable. And it was also next to a commercial building. We're like, you know what, let's just leave it as is. Let's lower the budget on doing that. Again, it's going to be really nice. Our focus is kitchens and bathrooms and curb appeal. Everything else, you know, just decent. That's kind of our approach, mm-hmm. especially in the town that we're in. And we did that, and you know, we were able to get our, you know, go under budget, and get our ARV actually higher than what we originally anticipated.
Wow, fantastic! So, give us maybe just a breakdown of the numbers. What did you buy this house for, and what did you end up putting in it, and what did you sell it for?
So we purchased it for $95,000.
Okay.
The seller had a tenant in there the guy hadn't paid rent for almost 2 years. we call it the voodoo house. The guy, I think he practiced a Santeria, but he had he hadn't paid rent, and he had this, I don't know, this doll or something in the front of the house with tons of dollar bills. I don't know, it must've been 100+. Again, I'll send you the picture of this because it was hilarious. And like, I remember going in with the landlord. I'm like, that's your money. I'm like, landlord first, religion second.
You know? Yeah. Was he maybe scared to evict him? He was going to put a curse on him or something?
Maybe. I mean, I you know, the seller, you know, she's like, oh, I feel badly, you know, for the tenant. I'm like, feel badly. I'm like, you know, you're not getting your rent money. So we ultimately evicted him. We worked out some deal. We did it through court and our eviction attorney. He left. He, you know, we told him, well, you know, we bought it mid-September of last year. He stayed through the end of October. We told him, you know, hey, you pay October, you know, we'll let you stay through then. And we said, you know, we'll give you actually $500 back if you leave the place, room swept clean, you get everything out there, which that was a huge blessing because this guy had tons and tons of stuff. So we gave the tenant $500 cash for keys, and he took his, so if we figure, hey, that's one dumpster aside, you know, and that doesn't even include all the labor getting this guy's stuff out because he had a ton of stuff.
That's a no brainer. Let me just say that $500, even if they don't have a ton of stuff, $500 to get a tenant out of a property to me is a bargain all day long. That's, and especially the fact that he had all this garbage you were going to have to deal with otherwise.
Yeah. No cement in the toilets. So.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
And anyway, so going back to the numbers, so we had originally budgeted about $85,000. I think we ended up putting about 70 in.
Okay.
I gotta dial into what the exact costs were, but we ended up selling it for $289,000.
That's a ridiculous profit. You're in the thing for what, $165,000, and sold it for $289,000.
Yeah.
So you made over $100,000 on the deal. Well, I guess you probably had some
like
selling
said,
costs and whatnot. Yeah.
We're converting our books from Excel to QuickBooks now. And so there might have been some missing things, but yes, it is possible. But like I said, I just don't want to, you know, say anything over the airwaves that might not be true.
Yeah. Well, trust me, I never know what I made on a deal until like a month or two after we closed it. Once everything kind of trickles back into QuickBooks and you figure out what your actual profit is, but roundabout, I mean, still, you bought it for 95, you put 70 in it, and you sold it for 289. That was your second deal out of the gates. I'd say that's smoking hot. That's fantastic. That is a great best deal ever. Well, you're only two in, and your best deal ever is better than a lot of people's best deal, you know, that have been in this for 10 years. So you're on the right track, especially if you can keep this trajectory of, you know, starting at 50 and then jumping to 100, and now you'll do 200 on your next deal, right?
Yeah.
So Jonathan, I guess let us know, is there a place where folks can find you online? Do you have like a website out there? Are you looking to raise capital? What do you need? How can I help you?
Oh, thank you. I mean, we're always interested in meeting people to place capital. I mean, we're pretty selective on our deals, which is, you know, why we've been able to hit these kind of numbers. But yeah, absolutely. Our website is johngeorgehomebuyers.com. We're working on our investor site at the moment. And feel free to reach out to me.
Again, folks, that's John George Home Buyers. And in the show notes, I'm going to put up, if you can send that to me, the loose leaf green ink paper with the cool font that you're using, maybe tell us what font it was. I'll put that up in the show notes as well. And if you've got any funny pictures of voodoo dolls, we'll put that up there as well. That's hilarious. That's a great story. Jonathan, thanks so much for being on the show. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. And Ken, it's John, J-O-N, not J-O-H-N. So for anyone just looking out.
Okay, gotcha. JohnGeorgeHomeBuyers.com. Perfect. Awesome. Thanks again, Jonathan. We appreciate it.
Ken, this was great. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care. Hey, Deal Farm podcast listeners. This is Ken Corsini reminding you to check us out online at DealFarm.net. Feel free to download our free ebook, How to Invest in Real Estate. And do not forget, we still have our free t-shirt offer going. All you have to do to get a free Deal Farm podcast t-shirt is go into iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. Once you've done that, go to our website, email us and let us know that you've done it. Give us your address and t-shirt size, and the t-shirt will be in the mail immediately. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of The Deal Farm. Take care.